The Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down. Bryce Young's career. You need 10. Play clock at 4. From the pocket. Launching downfield. Underthrown and intercepted. Keely Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone. And Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? I know, a new voice here on the intro, especially if you listen to us on podcast format, you're like, whoa, this is different. Usually I'm hearing Jeremiah first before I hear Jonathan, but no, I get the honors of doing the intro this time. So welcome to another episode of the Classic City Sports Podcast. We already got comments loading in. Morgan's already given us her staple Go Dogs. Dan Kiley's in the chat saying, let's go. He's pumped up. Now Jeremiah's joining in on the fun. So we're ready. The comments are ready. The people are ready. And we got a great show planned for you guys. We got some interesting topics to talk about, some national topics. And then, of course, we got some Georgia topics, one being a little bit of both, actually. Actually, two of them being a little bit of both. First one, Michigan. There are some the reports came out that they got this practice period that's called Beat Georgia. And we're going to talk about why Michigan needs to stop worrying about the one that got away. I'll expand upon that a little later into the episode. And then we're also going to talk about Brock Bowers because he's trending this week, you know. Coincidentally, I fired off a stat tweet, and then all of a sudden, Brock Bowers' name is flooding the news feed and everything. Not saying I caused the wave or anything, but, I mean, a little interesting. We'll talk about that. Got to talk about Brock Bowers, kind of what's maybe in store for him in 2023, and why the heck everybody's talking about the Georgia tight end this year. And then also, we're going to touch on Georgia's wide receivers a little bit. Saw an interesting video on social media this past week, and we're just going to generally talk about how Georgia has figured things out at that position, a position that they necessarily haven't all the pieces fit together in years past, specifically in Kirby Smart's first few years at Georgia. But now, heading into his eighth season at Georgia, he does have everything figured out. They have all the pieces now to go together and create a beautiful masterpiece heading into the 2023 season. So, Jeremiah, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. I appreciate you running through all that for us. I always do that, so I figured today was a good day to let somebody else do it and see how it goes.
What he's not telling you is he gave me the honors because I gave him a hard time about how I never get to do the intro. Jokingly, as long as he's like, all right, put up or shut up. You get to do the intro this week. So I got to do the intro. All right. So the first one we're going to talk about, Jeremiah, Michigan. I think this is interesting. Yeah. Now, I knew what the reaction was going to be on Twitter, especially from Georgia fans. I don't know that it warranted that type of reaction because, look, I know it does sound pretty cringe that Michigan is up there supposedly having a Beat Georgia practice period. Apparently, they also have a Beat Ohio State practice period as well, which I've done a pretty good job of the past couple of seasons. So now with implementing this Beat Georgia practice session, it not only kind of points to like, okay, Georgia is the standard in college football now. Like that is who everybody's trying to knock off. That's the standard that everybody is reaching for and grinding towards during the offseason, especially Michigan, who's been in the college football playoff now for back-to-back years as well. Not exactly great showings in either of those playoff games, but still, nonetheless, won the Big Ten and they made their they got their chance to win the national title. So I think Jim Harbaugh is a good coach, but Jeremiah, what are your thoughts on that? Why are you kind of on with the group of people that's like, all right, this is cringe. Like we don't need to be doing this. Or are you just kind of like, I'm more flattered than I am cringing.
Yeah, I'd say I'm honestly on the more of the I'm flattered than cringing. But the weird thing about it to me isn't the fact that they have that practice period. It's the fact that he came out and said something publicly to the media that he has said practice period. Because I'm not surprised that I'm sure there's a lot of teams out there that do something similar, right? When there's a whoever the pinnacle of college football is at the time, I'm sure that a lot of teams had that type of practice period for Alabama when they were sitting on top, winning national championship after national championship. I think that that's not that weird of something to be like looked at, right? Like if you can beat Georgia, you can beat everybody. So if you're practicing to beat Georgia, you are practicing to beat everybody right now. And I think that's the part that like is flattering for Georgia and Georgia fans and everything out there. This means that Georgia is the top of college football right now because people are taking time out of their practice every day to prepare to play against a team like Georgia or to play against Georgia specifically. Georgia has an incredibly electric offense at this point. They have a defense that's just unmatched over the past several years. And it's just something that when I look at it, it's like, yeah, it's important to be able to beat Georgia. You need to be able to go up there. And Georgia plays, let's go back to the old comment of grown man football, right? Like they play pro-style football. That's what they play. And they dominate at it. They go into these college teams that are very gimmicky, right? Think about Tennessee and their offense being what it was. They came into Athens last year and were shut down before the rain actually started. And the rain just made it even worse once it got to that point. The point is, this just means that Georgia is the pinnacle of college football right now. They are the team to beat. And other teams aren't just recognizing it. They're trying to fully prepare themselves in the offseason to get to the point where they can actually beat Georgia. And I hate to say it, it's not going to help Michigan if they actually match up against Georgia because guess what they don't have on their team when they're practicing against their own team? They don't have Georgia players on the other side of the ball. You can practice schemes and everything like that all you want, but it's not going to matter when you actually line up against the athletes that Georgia has because, yes, it is the X's and O's, but at the end of the day, the Jimmys and Joes are what makes Georgia so great right now.
It always comes back to the Jimmys and Joes. This is the way I will put it, and this is why I said Michigan needs to stop worrying about the one that got away because Michigan right now is playing the role of that best friend of yours that can't get over the one that got away, the girl that got away. You know, take it back to the 2021 college football playoff heading in. Michigan's finally got their chance at the college football playoff. They're going in against Georgia, who's basically been labeled as the best team in college football throughout the entire season up until they played Alabama. And so they got their sights set on this great game. They got their sights set on this great girl. And they go and meet up with this girl. And they go and meet up with Georgia. And things go to a disaster. The best offensive line, in quotations, gets absolutely manhandled by Georgia's defense. Stetson Bennett and that offense put up a bunch of points in a hurry, and that game was over by halftime. I mean, it wasn't even close. Georgia basically told Michigan, you're not in our league. We're going to go look elsewhere for someone else, just like how the girl would. And tell your friend that situation, like, hey, I'm out of your league, bro. This is not who I need to be chasing after. I'm going to go look somewhere else. And typically in that scenario, you might have a friend that's like that stays hung up on this girl that's in Michigan has stayed hung up on Georgia and playing them in the 2021 Orange Bowl. Orange Bowl, right? It was Orange Bowl.
Yes, it was the Orange Bowl.
And so it's like, man, you tell your friend, bro, start working on yourself. Stop worrying about that girl. Focus on yourself and go worry about the next one, the next opportunity that you have and working back, getting into that league. Don't worry about the one that got away. That's exactly what I'm telling Michigan right now. Don't worry about the one that got away. That was 2 years ago, bro. You don't need to be worrying about beating Georgia. You need to be worrying about taking care of your own business, making sure that you get another opportunity in the playoffs. And then if it happens to be that you play Georgia again, then sure. Hopefully you hope it works out better. But man, I just think you're staying. I just think it's a case of why are we hung up on this when you really just need to be worrying about taking care of your own business and making sure that you are playing the best version of your football every single week, because you've been able to do it for 12 weeks. You've proven that. You've been able to do it for 12 games in the regular season. You've gone, I mean, heck, you've defeated Ohio State, who's gotten the best of your number for a decade now, maybe even over a decade at this point. And so now you finally got over that hurdle. Now it's time to focus on that one. And, you know, so I think it's great, though. You know, if that's what gets your team going, if that's what gets them motivated, if that's what they're juiced up for and what they look forward to in practice is that session where they get to work on beating Georgia, being the best of the best and helping work their way towards being that number one team in the country, then by all means, keep doing what you're doing, Jim Harbaugh. I mean, you're there for a reason. I'm here for a reason. But I'm just saying, man, when you come out publicly and you talk about that, that's the kind of vibes that I get. It's the best friend that's talking about the one girl that got away.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said it earlier too, is like, it's not, to me, it's not that strange for them to be practicing and planning to if once again, if they can beat Georgia, they can beat anybody kind of thing. But to come out and actually verbalize it to the media, do you think Kirby Smart would ever come out there and in the offseason and say he has a practice period based on any other team? Do you think Nick Saban would ever say something like that? Do you even think Dabo Swinney would ever come out and say something like that? No, they wouldn't, because it's just weird. Like, it's weird to go out and tell people that's what you're trying to do. And it's going to be really funny when all these people have this stuff bookmarked and it comes down to, you know, you get to December and they don't even get the chance to play Georgia because, like you just said, they don't take care of business against TCU or a team, you know, or an Ohio State or whoever else, right? That's what's going to be funny is when everybody else starts quote tweeting this stuff, you know, in December, January, when it's like, hey, I wonder how well that beat Georgia practice was going for him back in June.
Yeah, it seems like now the writing's on the wall that they're going to roll up on their schedule and, you know, I don't know Michigan's schedule, but they're going to lose a game to someone like Purdue or something like that. And everybody's going to be like, man, you were worrying about Georgia and Ohio State. You should have been worrying about beating the Boilermakers or the Spoilermakers, like some people like to call them. So thought it was interesting, like you said, and what you highlighted. I thought it was interesting that he came out and spoke about it and publicly let everybody know what was going on. But I think that also may just be Jim Harbaugh's way of sending a message like, hey, yeah, we are coming after you. You are in our headlights. You are in our scope. That is who we're targeting right now. And we're coming after you. We're nipping at your heels.
We ain't going to be hunted at the University of Georgia.
We will not be hunted at the University of Georgia. Amen. Gotta love some good Kirby Smart quotes. All right, moving on now to another segment. Again, like I said at the beginning, Brock Bowers, of course, trending like he always does. This is not a rarity, and this is not a rare occurrence for Brock Bowers' name to be surfacing in the news, because why would you not talk about the best tight end in college football, the guy that's been the best tight end in college football for the last 2 years? You know, I fired off a tweet that the other day that said Brock Bowers has 20 touchdown receptions in his first 2 years at the University of Georgia. He is the only tight end in the last 53 years to have that many touchdown receptions in his first years as a collegiate athlete. I think he might be the only tight end in college football history. I couldn't exactly 100% confirm that, so I just went with 53 years, but there's a good chance that I think he is the only tight end to do that in college football history. So monster stats, monster numbers. Of course, we know that Brock Bowers has been rewriting the history book started. That is nothing new to us.
Oh, yeah.
His name is already littered all over the Georgia history books, and he's doing it now at a national level. And people said during his first year at the University of Georgia, like, that dude is a top five pick right now. People would take him in the first round of the NFL draft today as a 19-year-old. That's how good Brock Bowers is. And now this discussion, of course, you know, Florida fans get a little offended when they're not in the spotlight, when they think they need to, when they deserve to be. And so people kept taking it as a slight to Kyle Pitts, that were like, whoa, Kyle Pitts is by far the best college tight end ever. Did you forget what he did in 2020? Great season. But I don't know. I saw you kind of getting into the mix on that conversation, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on where do you stand in that conversation? Is Bowers ahead of Pitts, or how do you view that like comparison?
So as of right now, I'm not going to go out and say like today after the first two seasons that he is ahead of Pitts, because I think that Pitts was an incredible tight end in college. I think he's going to have an incredible career with the Atlanta Falcons in the NFL, because he is a very special generational type talent. The problem with this conversation, where the reason the Florida fans are getting slighted and Georgia fans are going back with him and stuff like that right now, is because they're both generational talents and they happen to be in the same generation. That's the part that makes it crazy, right? These are both tight ends. We've talked about this a while back, that like the NFL, if you have a tight end that is of that type of player, think about your Travis Kelce's out there, that kind of player, your offense instantly has an advantage over any defense out there, because it's just special. It's really hard to cover a guy like that. So as of right now, after the first two seasons, I'm not going to say he's hands down better than Pitts was in college. What I am going to say, though, is by the time he's done with his third season at Georgia, he's going to shatter every record that's ever been held by a tight end in college football. And he is going to have a season comparable to what Pitts had in 2020, where he had his best college season and went off and ended up being a top five draft pick. The thing that you saw on Twitter was I usually try to stay out of the conversations when it comes to like just arguing with fan bases, especially with Florida fans, because you don't usually get too far with it because they don't really listen to what you have to say at all. It's kind of funny. But at the end of the day, they were talking about it and going off on Bauer saying he's not that good, like basically saying he's not that good. He's not going to be a top five draft pick, all that. And I was like, well, I think after this season, I think he will be a top five draft pick. I think that he's going to be the type of guy that teams may not necessarily have the highest need at tight end, but if he's available at four, at something like that, and you're sitting there and you're like, this is a generational type talent. I cannot let him go. I cannot let him slip down this draft board because we can do so much with him. I think that's going to happen. And so I had to comment on somebody's post saying, well, is he a top five draft pick? Well, first of all, not yet, because he's not in the draft yet. Like, he's still got another season to play. We got to see how that plays out. And if he does what he did last year, this year, I think he 100% is a top five draft pick. And I don't know that it's going to come down to a team need kind of thing. I think a team will take him just because he's there. I think he is that type of player. But a Florida fan decided to say, you know that the stats alone aren't what make you a top five pick. And I was like, you know, he does more than what the stat sheets show, right? Like it's just a Florida fan thing. And to say that the stat sheet isn't what's going to make you a top five pick. Stat sheet 100% is what's going to put you in the top five pick when you shatter every college football record there ever was for a tight end.
Yeah. And Dan's right now taking the exact words out of my mouth. I was about to say, when I think of Kyle Pitts and I think of Brock Bowers, this is how I view them. Kyle Pitts is a great tight end because he plays like a wide receiver, because he doesn't fit that mold of a tight end, but yet he gets plugged in at tight end, and it's a major mismatch anywhere you want to plug him in. Now, Brock Bowers can do that, but Brock Bowers fits that mold of what a tight end in today's world of football looks like and should look like. Yet he runs a 4.4 40-yard time, and he makes plays after the catch, and he picks up yards after the catch, and he can do literally anything in the offense that you want him to. Heck, he can take a 75-yard jet sweep for a touchdown. We saw that last year. So he can literally do anything and everything. I don't see Kyle Pitts getting used like that, because that's not who Kyle Pitts is. Kyle Pitts is line him up at tight end, line him up in the X, line him up in the Y, get him the football. Just like Brock Bowers is, line him up at any of those positions and get him the ball. But he's he's a guy, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to express like what I'm trying to say exactly. But what I'm saying is Brock Bowers is – when you think of Brock Bowers, you think of tight end. But when you think of Kyle Pitts, I think of him more as than just a tight end. You know what I'm saying? He's exactly what Dan said. Like, I think of him more as a wide receiver almost because of the way he's built. And I think a lot of teams maybe even would have moved him to wide receiver. But, I mean, like I said, he just provides such a mismatch, especially at the college level, as a tight end. But I think if we're speaking to the conversation of who's the greater college tight end, it's Brock Bowers. I don't think there should be any discussion there. The fact that he's already done what he has in his first two seasons, he's already won a Mackey Award. He could potentially be the first player to ever win two Mackey Awards. And he's also probably going to be a first-team All-American again this year. And he might be in the running for the Heisman this year. Just going to go ahead and throw that out there. There's been some buzz about that, potentially what Georgia might do with him in the offense. And I've been saying, you get one more year of him, why not just go full nuclear with him and feed him the ball and see what he can do? See how great of a season Brock Bowers can have, you know, without being detrimental to your offense, of course, and not just honing in on him and forgetting about everybody else. But, I mean, heck, like I said, why not just force feed him in your last year?
For sure. And you hit on something that's extremely important to the conversation of him being a top five pick, because it's not that they're not entirely wrong when they say that the stat sheet isn't everything about what puts you at that type of pick. They're not entirely wrong there. It very much helps. And after he does all he does, it will put him up in that conversation. But what's going to solidify him in that conversation is when he goes out there to the combine and he runs a 4.4, like you just said, and he, you know, bench presses like crazy, and he shows his athleticism, his strength, his speed, all of the measurables. His vertical's got to be incredible too. You know it is. And you add all of that stuff together with the stats and what you've seen on film, that's what's going to lock him in there, because we've seen that happen with Georgia players the past, three combines. They go out there and then they just make everybody's jaw drop. And it's pretty much an entire, the whole weekend is a advertisement, just running advertisement for Georgia the entire time. Brock Bowers is going to be the one headlining that next year when he absolutely goes off. I think what's going to really blow people away is that 40, because like you said, taking the jet sweep for 75 yards, that's not even the end of it. We've seen him with safeties having incredible angles on him, and he just runs by them. We've seen him split safeties and run straight down the middle of the field and leave them in the dust. Like,
happening,
he's got
Georgia
the
Tech,
speed.
Happening against South Carolina. Like, yes. I mean, gosh, I'm just sitting here now imagining, what if he does somehow go sub 4.4? But go ahead and wrap up the combine. Don't even have any other tight end at that point run their 40 time, because we know who the first one off the board is. And heck, we would know who is a top five pick at that point. If you got a freaking tight end that runs a sub 4.4 or even a 4.4 for that matter, like you said, I mean, why? I mean, that's a guaranteed staple him in as a top 10 pick and borderline top five pick. I think it does depend on who is there. But like you said, there seems to always be a team in the top five that's like, we're taking the best player available. The Falcons did it when they took Pitts. That's exactly why Kyle Pitts went to Atlanta. It's because Atlanta was sitting there with the fourth pick overall and was like, we're going to take the best player available in Kyle Pitts. So if you get another situation like that, if they have the third pick or whatever, you might have another record where Brock Bowers becomes the highest drafted tight end or ties Kyle Pitts' record. So end of discussion. Both are generational. Both are really good. Both will go down of two of the game's greatest tight ends in college football history. Those two right there, especially for the 2000s, without a doubt. Those guys are, I mean, they're in a league of their own. They've shown it. They've shown that they can just take over games. And I put it in the article. It's like, if you want to know what a modern day tight end looks like, look no further than Kyle Pitts and Brock Bowers. Like, that is it. That is what teams are wanting now. They do not want these big body tight ends anymore, these end of line forces, unless your name is Darnell Washington. That's it. Unless you are a one percenter, 250-pound, 6'7" man who can also make plays after the catch, then we're really not targeting you in the first or second round. You know, we're going to look elsewhere, and we're just going to fill that void in free agency, maybe. So,
well, it's one of those things too that, like, the reason it's going that way is because it's an extra weapon on offense, right? Like, it's another thing that the defense has to now worry about when they didn't have to worry about as much before. If it's just a put your hand in the dirt type tight end that's going to block and you know, maybe catch a couple of routes here and there. But when it's somebody like Pitts and like Bowers, that's what's going to absolutely just make your offense something special, because now the defense has an extra thing to worry about. And guess what? They have to try to cover them with a safety or a linebacker, and a linebacker has 0% chance of being like continuously successful against either of those tight ends. It just doesn't work. And this whole conversation that we're having right now, like Jonathan mentioned earlier, he fired off a tweet and then it just, you won't say it, but I mean, you start like after you fired off that tweet, you fired off two tweets in like 2 days or whatever about Brock Bowers. And then all of a sudden everyone's quoting your stuff and using it on things. And then all of a sudden we're seeing articles everywhere about him. And just to mention this too, cause he's also not going to say this. That's what got this man on 92.9 The Game yesterday, by the way. If you haven't listened to that, he killed it on there as well. And it's worth listening to for sure. But all of this stuff has happened because my boy puts in work on Twitter, and he puts in all of the, I mean, it's one of those things that let me ask you this. You brought up the whole 53 years thing for him. Remind me how many players you had to look through to determine that.
So I think it was like a little over 125 different like statistical stat sheets. Like, I would basically, the whole process for me for that was started with 2023, and I just search barred like tight end statistics, and it was going down the list and analyzing every single stat sheet, making sure that player in their first years of college football did not exceed or reach 20 touchdowns. And I did that from 2022 all the way back to 2004. And then even after that, it was going back through the historical stat logs of like finding out which tight ends were setting records and had the most receptions and things like that. And it was going through their stat logs. And so, yeah, I mean, it took me over an hour and a half, I think, to decipher through all of that. So, yeah, I mean, I do put in work, and I'm glad that it gets results. Don't get me wrong. I love that. That's why I do it. Clearly, people enjoy it. And that's why, I mean, I love seeing people enjoy my content. And I'm glad that I found an avenue that makes me maybe a little different in this Georgia space that people recognize me as. That's all I'm trying to do, is kind of make a name for myself. And so I'm willing to put in the work for it. Obviously, I just told you that. So getting off of me, though.
I just wanted to make you say that so people understand why they see your at on the screen right now, Dr. underscore J. Well, why they need to be following you, because it's not just throwing out some stuff that anybody can just find. It's deep dive and actually figuring out some pretty cool information. And that type of effort is why that type of stat ends up going as viral as it did, and it did as much for you. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to make you say it.
Thank you for doing that, I guess. Thank you for being a good co-host. But like I said, getting off of me, because I'm not here to toot my own horn whatsoever. I do want to touch on Dan's comment right here. He said the only thing prohibiting Brock from being a top five is teams valuing that position that high. I get what you're saying, but also at the same time, we just had three tight ends go in the first round last year, which makes Brock Bowers winning the Mackey Award last year even more impressive, the fact that he did it when there was three first-round tight ends in college football. But, I mean, also, like I said, it all has to do with who's going to be in the top five, who's drafting there. If you get a team like the Atlanta Falcons who's going to take the best player available, then it's absolutely a possibility that Brock Bowers is a top five pick. Now, if it's like last year, where it was all quarterback heavy and everybody's gunning after a quarterback, and then of course someone's going to pick up Will Anderson in the top five, then yeah, you may not get Brock Bowers in the top five. But if it's, like I said, if it's like the 2020 draft, then you never know what could happen. You never know that if Brock Bowers very easily could be a top five pick depending on the situation. That's the whole point, is that there's a possibility that could happen. There's a possibility that he'll have a Heisman Trophy to his name as well.
It's very possible. And then, but the quarterback situation could be what plays in, because you've got some big name quarterbacks that are going to be, you know, in that draft next year.
Caleb Williams might as well already have his name posted in as the number one overall pick.
Yep.
I mean, it's that simple. Teams have been drooling over that guy since he was in high school. I mean, NFL GMs have been nipping at the bit just to get him on their roster. Teams that need a quarterback. And there's quite a few teams that are always needing a quarterback.
There's always teams that need quarterbacks.
Yeah, for sure. All right, now we're going to transition to our last segment of the night, and this is all about wide receivers. And Stoddard and I were talking about a clip that we saw on Twitter that kind of ignited this conversation, but it has more to do with than what we're about to talk about. We're more so going to speak on exactly Brian McClendon, what he has done, and how he's kind of shaped this wide receiver room to what it is now, and how Georgia has it figured out, and just kind of provide some context to that. But there was this clip of Mekhi Muse and Marcus Rasimi-Jack Saint talking about Brian McClendon and what makes him so different. Why does Marcus Rasimi-Jack Saint like him so much? Because he had both Cortez Hankton and he had Brian McClendon. And in the clip, he's like, Brian McClendon is doing the most. He is doing the extra things that we need. You know, he's making us get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to go get in extra practice. And he says, Cortez Hankton was not doing that for us. We were not doing anything extra. We were showing up to practice like we were supposed to, doing our drills, and that was it. Whereas Brian McClendon is requiring a lot more of his wide receivers than they were in years past. And I think that's made a difference, because as soon as Brian McClendon got on the coaching staff, and you saw an immediate change in the wide receivers, you saw Ladd McConkey continue to take steps forward. And I think it's kind of why you see guys like Marcus Rasimi-Jack Saint work his butt off every single game. Even though he may not be getting eight touches a game, he's out there blocking his butt. And anytime you need him to make a play, he's going to show up and he's going to give you his all every time. And it's why there's guys like Ladd McConkey scrapping at the roster, trying to get anything and everything that he can and always improving on his game, because those guys need that. But you also have the guys that are willing to put in that extra work. But then you also have to be able to recruit more of those guys, and he's done that. We've talked about what he's reeled in these past recruiting classes. We heard all of the buzz about these true freshman wide receivers, Yazeed Haynes being one of them. Anthony Evans is another guy. We heard about these guys in winter before the national championship. Yeah. We were already hearing stuff about these true freshman wide receivers. And now this next class, you're getting even more of them with guys like Nitro Tuggle, Nye Carr, these more wide receivers that are looking to be really solid. I mean, heck, anytime Nitro Tuggle goes anywhere, it seems like he's just continuing to blow up. I said the guy's a rocket ship, because he is. He continues to rise up the ranks, and he continues to prove, like, this dude is going to be somebody in college football. He's going to be a good dog for the Georgia Bulldogs. And I just think that bringing in a guy like Brian McClendon, who has ties to Georgia already, you know, played at the University of Georgia. He has been a coach at Georgia prior to being with Kirby Smart. And he was even the interim head coach at one point as well. So this is a guy that loves Georgia, has coached at Georgia before. So you get that portion of it. But then he's also requiring his guys to do extra. And so it proves that Kirby Smart doesn't not only require his players to take extra steps and do more. If you want to be good at University of Georgia, you have to do those things. But if you're not doing those things at a coach either, you're not going to last at Georgia. Cortez Hankton didn't last at Georgia. Now Brian McClendon's here, and he's doing those extra things. He's doing things outside of what is required of him and making sure that his guys are in check when it's time to line it up on Saturdays. And so I think that's how Georgia has now figured it out at wide receiver. We're going into this season, and we talk about, like, man, Georgia has a lot of good names at wide receiver, and they're going to do something special.
Yeah, they're definitely going to do something special. And a name that, like, especially because of this video, right? I think it's worth noting. Mekhi Mews is going to be a guy that absolutely gets his way on the field this year in one way or the other, right? He reminds me a lot of looking at, like, think about like Isaiah McKenzie in Georgia's offense, where he's that punt return specialist. He's a kick return specialist, plays the slot, and does an extremely good job there. Now he's got Ladd in front of him at the slot position, so that's obviously going to kind of prevent him from getting on the field too much there, because Ladd absolutely deserves the role that he has right now. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do with the opportunities he gets. I think he's going to potentially blow up. But then there's like so many other names like that you were just naming as well. I really want to see something out of Marcus Rosemead-Jackson as well this year. He's been there for a little while. He's dealt with some injuries. Last year, he didn't get that much of a look. But this year, I'm hoping with all of the work that he's doing with McClendon, like you just talked about, that it's going to translate over to his game. But I don't want to overlook what you just talked about with McClendon either, because I think that's the Georgia brand, like you were saying, that is what is expected from everybody on that roster, on that coaching staff, and everything like that as well. And I think it's crazy to think that, you know, before McClendon got there, you weren't getting as much of that extra work. But just listening to those two guys talk and the way they talked about him, Mekhi Mews was like, yeah, I didn't really like him when I first got here. I mean, it's because he was running you a lot. Like, he was making you work your butt off. And it's hard to appreciate that sometimes when you're sweating it out and you're actually struggling and you're new to college football. You just got up there and you're having to deal with it. So yeah, I can understand you maybe don't like the guy so much at first, but once you get through that, get over that little hurdle of getting kind of used to the system and used to what you're supposed to be doing, you can actually appreciate what he's doing for you and all the extra work and how important it is, right? Like they were talking about, you know, you get there and he's helping with running through like your releases, your routes and all that kind of stuff. Like that's what's going to make you different than somebody else, is actually taking the extra time to focus on stuff like that. And I think it's going to translate over, and you're going to start seeing some UGA wide receivers show out a little bit more than we've seen over the past couple of seasons. And you're going to have some bigger names go in the draft and everything like that. We haven't really had that big name since George Pickens on that roster as much yet, but I think it's coming. I think it's all in the works right now, and it's going to be beautiful to see that position group elevate their game to the level that the rest of the roster has been at for a while.
Absolutely. Harry, I see in the comments saying Mews should contend for return duties, and I think he will for two reasons. One, he earned that right to contend for that spot in the G-Day game. Yeah. He showed what he can do. Heck, he housed two kickoffs, I believe. I think it was two. And then also for another reason, Ladd McConkey has been banged up a little bit. He's had to deal with some injuries because, heck, the dude isn't exactly 6'3 and 210 pounds or anything like that. I mean, he's kind of small a little bit, but that's also kind of what makes him so good, is because he doesn't play like his size.
Right.
But so he's had some injuries, and so maybe Georgia wants to get him out of that role and maybe keep him from getting his head blown off in the return game. And so I think Mews would make a great returner because he has the go-go juice, and I think he would make the most of his opportunities, and I think he'd be really good at it. Why not utilize those weapons that you have on the roster, make the most of them? And he's clearly a weapon. So, and I think this is what makes Georgia's wide receiver room so – you know, people are so excited about it, not only are you returning basically every single wide receiver that you had last year outside of like A.D. Mitchell, who's now at Texas, it's also the fact that you brought in two other SEC wide receivers and Rob Thomas and Dominic Lovett. And Dominic Lovett is one specifically that Georgia fans should really hone in on and really be pumped up about, because he was one of the most explosive players in college football last year. He was essentially, outside of Jalen Hyatt, he was considerably the most explosive player in SEC last year. He was making big-time plays for Missouri, and now he's going to be with Georgia with a whole lot of other weapons on the field, guys that can also do a lot of different things. And so when a defense has to worry about more than just Dominic Lovett, that might create space for him. And then when teams have to worry about Dominic Lovett, that might create space for Ladd McConkey, Marcus Rosemead-Jackson, any of those guys that are lining up for at wide receiver for Georgia. Arian Smith, heck, go down the list. Georgia has a lot of different options and a wide variety of skill sets at wide receiver. And Brian McClendon has done an impeccable job getting those guys ready and their development, recruiting on the trail. I know that, you know, everybody wants Georgia to go get the five-star Jeremiah Smith and go get the best wide receiver in the class. And I get it. Why wouldn't you want the best rated player in the class at that position or any position for that matter? Everybody wants the best of the best. But even outside of that, even with Georgia not getting those players, Brian McClendon and Georgia themselves have done a great job with that position and helping elevate it and helping continuous growth at that position. Because you go back to 2019 and we were like, what are we doing here? It feels like we have nobody to throw the ball to outside of George Pickens and Lawrence Cager. Like, that's all it feels like right now. What is going on? And now you come into 2023 and you're like, I don't know who's going to lead the team in receptions or receiving yards at wide receiver, because we have so many dang options and we have so many good options. So that's what continuous growth looks like. And that's what it looks like to recognize a problem on your roster, figure out how to fix it, bring in a guy to fix it, and now you're seeing good results from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about that with Kirby Smart before. Whenever there is that position that seems to be lacking behind the rest, or lagging behind the rest, I should say, then he always finds a way to fix it. He did it with the tight end position at first, right? Well, I mean, he had to go out and get a couple transfer tight ends over those same years of the 2019, 2018, and 2020 area. Had to go get some guys in that aspect to be able to kind of keep his roster up to at least that level. And then the recruiting side of it started to pick up or catch up to it, because you had to give those guys time to get on campus. That's where Brock Bowers and all these other guys that are now on the roster, like Delp and everybody else, that there's so many names out there. Lawson Lucky, like all these guys, you got to give them a little bit of time to actually get out there and do it. So he had to go get some transfers at that position. He had to get some transfers at defensive back at times. He's had to, you know, get transfers all over the place when he has a position of need. And then after he does that, that recruiting cycle and everything starts to really pick it up to where you don't have to go to that you don't have to do that anymore. And I think that's what's going to happen here is, like you just talked about, got some guys from last year's recruiting class that are already showing up and doing some work before Georgia even played in the national championship this year in December. And then you've got the guys on the commitment list already, and there's some big targets out there. Yeah, and I know Georgia fans are – I saw something today where they were like, yeah, McClendon's doing all this. Now you got to actually start closing on some of these five stars. Well, they're important, right? Five stars are important. You want those guys. Everybody wants those guys. That's the thing. But if you don't get them, the great coaches aren't just the ones that can get that five-star receiver. The great coaches are the ones that can get that three-star Ladd McConkey and get him 750 to 800 yards receiving in a year because they've developed him. Talking about that work that McClendon has done with these guys over the past couple seasons, where they're getting up at 7 a.m. and they're doing all this stuff and doing the extra work outside of their normal practice, that's where the great coaches are. That's what the great coaches do to do it. And that's what Kirby Smart embodies in his entire coaching staff. And that's why we're starting to see that change at that position group. And it's going to be fun to watch over the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about for Georgia's roster, but I think wide receiver specifically is going to be interesting to watch this year, just to see how much of a step forward they're going to take and just how great they're going to be, because so many of these guys are in that later part of their careers. Speaking of Ladd McConkey and a lot of the guys that we've named, and it's like everybody wants to see a healthy Arian Smith. What can he do in a full season? Like that type, there's that type of excitement, that much to look forward to. And I think people are looking forward to that. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, especially with how good the offense is built from offensive line all the way to tight ends and wide receivers and running backs. So a lot in good shape, obviously, to do some special things on offense with Mike Bobo at the helm. Now, I'm about to do the outro, but I'm going to let you do it instead because I got to do the intro. So now you get to do the outro, putting you on the spot.
Flip the whole script on us. All right, everybody, first of all, make sure you like this video if you watched with us this long. Hopefully you already did, but if you haven't and you forgot because you were so caught up in the conversation, make sure you hit that button, subscribe to the channel, and make sure you follow us on all social medias and stuff like that as well for all the great content and everything that we bring out. That's all I got. I'm not as good at that as you.
All right, well, we'll get you there. We'll rehearse together. We'll get you as a plug man here in a little bit. We'll get all the kinks worked out, and we'll have you spitting that off like it's nobody's business. But now I get to say these glorious words. Keep it classy in the Classic City, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stodfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime,
to Stewards, which express the sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.